Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Well, hello, and welcome back to the Worst Year Ever, the podcast where we talk about the worst year ever. The one
is it still not a good year?
Still very bad.
They didn't fix it?
No.
All right. Well, I'm going to call our mechanic and have him jiggle the handle of the year. Mm-hmm.
Let's just pull out the engine and blow on it a little bit and see if that helps.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We'll try. Mm-hmm. We'll try a few things.
Yeah.
I'm Katie.
Hi. I'm Cody Johnston.
I'm also Cody Johnston.
It's not true.
It might be.
Got a conflicting facts here. Today we have an interview for you guys with Billy Jensen, the investigative journalist, crime solver guy.
I love solving crimes.
You might have first become aware of him as he helped finish Michelle McNamara's book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which was all about the Golden State Killer. And brought that to national attention. And he has done quite a lot of his own work and solved a bunch of crimes. And we connected over the Robert Fuller case. And we'll get into that case in our conversation. But we're really grateful that he took the time to speak with us because he has a very unique perspective about working with the police and what defunding the police means a different perspective than I'd heard talked about, which I appreciated.
Yeah, I can't wait to play the interview that we have finished already.
Let's do it. Let's do that
yes,
now.
Yes, let's go back in time to the interview that we
How would we do that?
Just minutes ago.
Oh, God.
How what do would we have to do that? To go back in time?
Some sort of sound.
That oh my God!
Let our listeners know that we've returned to the past in order to conduct an interview.
Just do it and get it over with. Is he doing it?
No. Yeah. Do you not hear it?
I could hear it.
I was definitely doing it.
All right.
I was doing something.
That wasn't as wet as the time machine noises normally are. There we go. There we go. That's the time machine noises that I've wanted.
I had to jiggle the handle to get it to work.
On that note, here's Billy Jensen, a real professional. Hi, Billy. Thanks for joining us today. Why don't we get started by, you know, having you introduce yourself a little bit and tell us about the work that you do so our listeners know why they should respect everything that you say.
Understood. Yeah. So I'm a crime investigative journalist. I've been doing it for two decades now. And I would focus exclusively on unsolved murders. And the problem with unsolved murders is, you try to solve them, but you usually never do. So you're writing stories with no endings. I got fed up after a while, and my day job turned into, from a newspaper editor to being sort of like the digital guy at newspaper companies, where I would be the one that would know how to bring in viewers to the websites. And I was watching a video of a man being attacked on the street in Chicago, and he gets punched out, is lying on the sidewalk on the crosswalk, and then a cab rolls over his chest and kills him.
Oh my God.
And I said, there was really great video, great in terms of being able to identify who the perpetrator was, but 2 months after I'd watched that, they still hadn't done it. And I said, why haven't they done it? And then something clicked and just said, because nobody's watching the news anymore. Nobody's reading newspapers anymore. So I took it upon myself to try and catch him. And I did. I was able to get him. So using social media and using a variety of different techniques. And, that sort of set me on another kind of path. And that was 3 years ago. And that set me on another kind of path of kind of trying to, that was 4 years ago, actually, of trying to work any kind of like skills that I might have in investigating and social media to help solve murders and find missing persons and find fugitives. Yeah.
And I was looking at your website a little bit. You've solved a lot of cases.
Yeah. Solved or help solved. Yeah.
Help I mean, solved. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, you know, I can, it's a needle in the haystack when you're looking for a person and you just have a blurry image on a video and it's a needle in a haystack. And then I've got to go and find that needle. But I do know then that, you know, they've got to obviously build up enough for the, for a case on that person. But yeah, no, it's been about 10 so far and one missing person and one murder fugitive. So,
wow. So Billy and I connected over the Robert Fuller case. For those of you who don't know, Robert Fuller was a 24-year-old black man who was found hanging from a tree across from Palmdale City Hall on June 10th, I believe. Police in the area immediately called it a suicide to the press before conducting any kind of an investigation, which at best is a wildly negligent thing to do at any point, but especially during our current political climate. Many of our listeners know that I've been following this case really closely and been looking for ways to use this platform to amplify the story. And Billy has been digging in and doing his own investigative work. And I was hoping that you could talk to us a little bit about what you have been doing, anything that you have been learning, updates on the case.
Yeah, so it, like you said, it happened on Wednesday. Nobody outside of, nobody even in Palmdale knew, but on Friday, that I believe was when I think Kim Kardashian tweeted out at it and a bunch of other people just saying, what the hell? His teacher direct messaged me on Instagram and said, I was his teacher. He was a great kid. Can you please look into this? I turned on the news and wanted to find out what was going on. Turned on the news. That's an old expression. I went on the internet and
you opened your phone.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to the newspaper carrier and, and the evening edition was out. So, and I heard them say there were no cameras in the area. And as soon as I heard that, I wanted to call bullshit. So I went to Google Maps and said, where the hell is Palmdale? I was like, oh, it's an hour and a half away during rush hour, at least from Los Angeles. So I drove up and the press conference had just ended where they had said that. And they had said it earlier as well. There were maybe like 10 to 20 people in the park. So this was a park where he was found. It was like a city hall park. So I walked past the tree where he was found, where a memorial was starting to take shape. And then I, within 5 minutes, saw one camera on the Whispering Palms apartment building. And then I saw another camera on Whispering Palms. Then I walked around to another place. I saw a Ring camera. Then I saw what was probably our best bet, which was a camera on a in the window, but it was facing directly towards the tree 50 yards away at a digital a studio, a photography studio, so called Ocho 8. And I thought, Ocho A. And I thought, you know what? They're going to have the best bet because if it's a photographer who probably knows cameras and the camera looked good. So and I just took pictures of those and did a video and just said, you're lying to us. You know, this is not a matter of me knowing what happened or anything. I'm just saying that you are lying to us. And as we kept going, it's just... looking at it from a public relations perspective, even if you're a town and a black man is found hanging in front of City Hall during the biggest civil revolution in our lifetimes, why would you even try to quote unquote bury the story, which they did? There was nothing about it on social media. They were looking for 2 days after he was found, they were looking for a owner of a dog on their social media. Mm-hmm. And they...
also yeah. sharing pictures of snacks that they have. Snacks, a lot of pictures of snacks. Yeah.
And there was nothing about it. Also, I'm not going to give the Antelope Valley news a pass because they ran with the story that it was allegedly a suicide too and didn't even question it. You know, it's one thing to call allegedly in there, but no, you question that. And they nobody was doing the right thing. And I wanted to really just sort of amplify it. And when I was up there... I started taking pictures, and people were asking me what I was doing. And as the crowd started getting bigger and bigger, and then other people started, there was a woman with her daughter, and she was going around taking pictures, and then we would share them with each other. And so, and it wasn't just those, it was also the areas leading up, the roads leading up to it. And my biggest thing was about the police department, them lying, literally lying. That's what Brian Schaefer said, at the that there were no cameras. So then that night, you know, I had tweeted all these things out. The mayor of Palmdale writes me, no, they said there were no cameras in the park, not around the park. And I said, no. And I sent him the video of him saying in the area. And then I think he must have realized that he had screwed up, and then he deleted his account.
Oh, God.
And then I was like, where'd you go? And then I wake up the next morning and he sent me a letter. He's replied to me with a letter of them sending a letter to the attorney general asking for outside assistance and an independent investigation, throwing the sheriff's department under the bus. So he chose a side then. You know, he decided, I got to be on the right side of this. I can't be with the police. I'm going to be with, you know, trying to call up with an independent investigation. I mean, good on him. But then I asked him, I said, why are you just replying this to me? Why is this not up on your main feed?
Mm-hmm.
And he replied that he doesn't really know Twitter that well.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But who really does at the end of the day? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That old chestnut.
Yeah.
So you went around and you talked to some of the businesses yourself, correct?
Yeah. So I went back up on Friday. A week from when I had gone up and the first time. And I just wanted to canvass all the businesses to see, because nobody was answering the phone. So I wanted to call and see, personally call and see, hey, you know, have the police gone there? I talked to 7 businesses. Only 2 of them said the police had gone there. One was the State Farm agency, who was a former cop, who mm-hmm. said that they asked him and... his cameras had been broken. The other was a auto body type place that was really kind of far away. And they said yes immediately. Like just like, oh yeah, they were here. Yeah. Like that. Every place else, the, Ocho A place, which I'll get to in a second, cause that was our best chance. But there was like a, Mama's, fish place, Mama Seafood, I think it was called, which is right on the, closest intersection. There was a pawn shop next to that. No, they hadn't been asked. Still haven't heard from Whispering Palms. You know, asked a bunch of other places. And, you know, when somebody goes, say when a person goes missing, or like during the Hanegram investigation in Charlottesville, when she went missing and then wound up being murdered, you go to every business that isn't even around where she was last seen. You go to like, you know, you do like a block search and a grid search, and then you try to find anything that might be. So what you'd be looking for is Robert Fuller walking alone? Is Robert Fuller walking alone with a bag or a rope or something? Mm-hmm. Is somebody following him then? Is he encountering people? So you get a sense of what might have been happening, and they did none of this. And unfortunately, the best shot that we would have had is the Ocho A digital photography studio. They were not asked, and they also wiped their footage, they told me, within 24 hours. So, and that's just a matter of probably because they have a good camera. It's probably because they have a good camera. And it eats up a lot of hard drive space, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
would have been really good to see that guy's footage.
It's not their fault because nobody even knew. They didn't even know. You know, that was something was going on. And that is the police department's fault. And I can't sit there and say, I have no idea what happened with Robert Fuller, whether, you know, he was murdered or whether he decided to take his own life. But I do know that the police department did a really piss poor job of investigating, did a really piss poor job of messaging. And then lied about it.
They could
have said, you know, they could have, the amount of overtime they probably had to pay their officers now for all the protests, this could have been 5 hours of work collecting this footage. Yeah. And putting it out there and saying, yes, we have footage of him walking by himself. People would still question it because it might have been 5 minutes before or something like that. But they still could have had that. And they didn't do it. And it's just at best, it's horrible police work. Let's just put it to you that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Like horrible police work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think important to note when discussing this case, the situation, is the fact that Palmdale, Lancaster area, absolutely does have a history of white supremacy, of
the history of white supremacy in the sheriff's department. There was literally a neo-Nazi gang in not very far away in Linwood, that was made up of nothing but sheriff's deputies.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
You say best case scenario, this is terrible police work. Worst case scenario, it's something more sinister. But at the very least, you would think during this specific point in time, this cultural revolution, you would do your due diligence and cover the very basic steps that need to be covered.
Another thing they didn't even do, sorry to cut you off.
No, please tell us all the things.
Malcolm Harsh was found hanging 2 weeks prior, 10 days prior, in Rosemont, a little bit away, 60 miles away, 50 miles away. They didn't even call that agency to share notes or whatever. And that's the thing that I and it turns out that there was video of that and the family had seen it and they have agreed that it was death by suicide. But, you know, that's something that I am constantly harping on police departments is because they never, ever talk to each other. We have 17,000 different law enforcement agencies and, you know, our ability to solve crimes is based on this idea that nobody has cars or trains or planes or anything. And people just, you know, ride horses. That's entirely how we think about how we solve crimes in America. And we're not, you know, like when we start talking about the ideas of defunding the police, I want to defund the police because not only to try to dismantle the systemic racism and everything, the thing that I've been asking for so long is better investigative skills and better investigative uses. And, you know, we're not crushing it when it comes to solving crimes. We solve 62% of homicides, less than 1% of sexual assaults lead to a felony conviction. You know, we can do a hell of a lot. So anybody that might like true crime and is wondering, wait, defund the police, who's going to catch the murderers? We can do a hell of a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely wanted to touch on that because you work closely with police departments or detectives, I would assume, in the course of your work. And you're right. A small percentage or not enough crimes get solved. And when people talk about push back against defunding the police or police abolishment, they say like, oh, well, what about the bad guys? What about the serious crimes? You're right. We're not doing too great as is. And there needs to be some significant reform.
Yeah.
With that.
Take away all of the minutiae that ruins people's lives, like the drug possession arrests and convictions. All of this time that we're spending on these small crimes that takes up 99% of what the police are doing. You know, everything from, being a crossing guard or doing traffic or watching out when there's so many things, you know, finding lost dogs, all these things that people don't understand because you know what? You don't see it on TV.
Yeah.
You know, if cops was real, it'd be boring as hell. Because guys would be, you know, changing tires on the highway for people. They'd be doing so many things that, and changing tires, by the way, is a Training Day reference, but they'd be doing so many things that are not, like you're wondering, why does a cop need to do this? And that's what defunding the police comes down to. What I also want to do is use this as an opportunity to say, hey, we could, you know, because I work with a lot of police, but I also work with a lot of families. And the families, when they hear of victims, and when the families hear defund the police, they they go nuts because a lot of the families, they're looking, they want more resources. And what I try to explain to them is that this needs to change because it's not been working now. I mean, there's a reason why your loved one, the case is still open. And it's because the resources are not being allocated in a way, because you might hear $3 billion budget for the LA Police Department, but you know how much of that is really, really going to solving serious crimes? And it's not that much.
Right. There's another aspect to this story that happened. I think it was about less than a week after Robert Fuller was found. His brother, Tyrone Jamal Boone, his half-brother, was killed by the LAPD in a shootout of some sort, or as it's been described. I have not seen very much information on this. There seems to be the story seems confusing. You look at social media, you look at different reporting on it. There is a vague reference to him investigating his brother's death on his own. There is also talk about him kidnapping somebody and holding her hostage. The police say that he got out of his car and fired at them, but from what I believe, he was found in the car and was killed through the window of the car. I'm not saying any of this for fact because I'm confused by it.
Also, they seem to be lying about a lot of this stuff, so maybe it's hard to
parse. Well, it does seem like that makes it difficult to trust them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just curious if you have any information on that or any thoughts or insights to share.
The story that has been released by the police, which, you know, the news has reported, is that he had apparently kidnapped his girlfriend for 6 days. This is what the police are saying. And there was also maybe like a domestic violence charge against him as well. She was able to escape. She went to the police. They got a warrant. They followed him. This is LA sheriffs. They followed him into Kern County. And then they surrounded him. Now, I have no idea what is going on with this case, but I will say this man's brother had just been found hanging in a park. The police weren't doing anything. Then he gets surrounded by three apparently plainclothes cops in unmarked cars with guns drawn, and he gets out and starts shooting. That's what they're telling us.
That's what they're telling us.
Yeah.
The cops do not have their body cams on.
No.
Also, there was a woman in the car with him that also got shot, and a child in the car.
Yeah.
Look, if you're going to be shooting at a guy in a car, sometimes you're going to hit a kid and another lady. That's just going to happen if you're firing wildly at a car. You know?
Yeah.
That's a risk you just got to take, I guess.
Like a consequence and risk.
Yeah.
If you're going to shoot at a car with a person in it. Yeah.
But who
was the woman then? It was somebody else.
Yeah, it was not. I've heard that it might have been an ex-girlfriend. I don't know.
Okay.
It's all very confusing and strange. You know, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but I think it's also really important to note that this is odd. And within a week of each other, this huge response to his half brother, and again, the body cams not being on. There's Ring footage that has been circulating online about it that does not sound like he got out of his car and fired at them, but who are we to know? I don't know for a fact. I'm just sharing the stuff that I've been reading about.
Yeah, it's definitely something that, again, it's something that they want to, they tried to get ahead of that one, you know, by saying, and what's the one way you're going, and it very well might be true, but the one way that you're going to get the public against somebody is by putting a domestic violence charge against them, you know? So, And again, it very well might be true. I'm not sure. I have no idea, but they were very quick to put that story out there and say, this is the reason why we were looking for him. So that definitely tamped any kind of activism that you might've seen on social media about that.
Yeah.
You know, but it's still, it's a very there's a lot of like too many strange coincidences, especially considering like when I said, all right, I'm going up there. A lot of people started DMing me saying like, tell me about Antelope Valley and the history of racism up there. You know, they had blocked people of color from Section 8 housing, I believe. And I think the police were complicit in that at one point. So there are stories about that. And, you know, when we met in person for the first time, we were up we went up to march for Juneteenth / Robert Fuller. They were going to do it in Palmdale, but then they moved it to Lancaster. So everybody would be in Lancaster. And then there was a rumor that the Klan was going to show up in Lancaster. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, what did you think of that? Because, you know, I was watching from towards the back once we got to the park, and yeah, I noticed some things that were interesting. What did you see when you were there?
I don't know that I was pretty immersed in watching the speakers when I was there. I will say that the day before I was up there as well, and I can attest firmly that there were some very unsettling people lingering around in big white trucks, with the engines running, you know, big white men mm-hmm. threateningly flashing the lights every so often. I can attest to that. And then towards the end of the gathering on Juneteenth, there was a big tone shift. You know, things started to be agitated, and they ended the rally early. But I didn't observe much there. I know that you and a couple people were documenting cars that were driving through.
Yeah. You know, so yeah, like you said, there are a couple of scuffles because people were on edge, you know, yeah. People were thinking, yeah, that, you know, and when I say Klan, I'm not saying that I don't think there was going to be, you know, it was more white supremacists. It's more sort of white supremacist biker gang types, I think, is what right. we were thinking. But there was the Klan was mentioned. So, you know, what happened was is that the Klan was supposed to show there at 7. I think we started at yes. 5, and the Klan was supposed to show at 7. So I had kicked back with an organizer from LA, and we were just watching everything. And like we sort of started seeing like a couple people, you know, people started showing up that were kind of like on the outskirts, just like looking around. And we're talking about these were people that part of the BLM movement or black men just wanting to see, wanted to make sure like everything was going to be okay. Right around 7 o'clock, the one thing that I noticed is that so from 5 o'clock to 7, of all the cars that passed, there were maybe two white guys in the cars. Mm-hmm. And the way that the park is situated is that it's almost like a dead end. There's no real there's no reason to pass by it. It's right. not even a shortcut. It's slow.
It's out it's of like, the way.
Out of the way. Not even a shortcut. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once 7 o'clock hit, the cars became increasingly white, and it went from maybe, you know, 5% white to 50% white. There was something there, and whether they were just going to check it out, huh? We heard this is going on or whatever, or who knows? A lot of trucks, a lot of, you know, groups of guys in there, whatever, that might've just been wondering what was going on, or they might've been trying to post up and see if there was a bunch of other people there, and then they would get out and yeah. do something. And then you would see them. And some of them actually drove through. And apparently I was trying to see if there was a way out, but they drove through and they drove back around. And we would see that. We would see people like drive through and drive back around, and nobody was really even noticing them. So me and this one organizer, Nisi, we started taking pictures just in case, you know, because yeah. the threat was that they would not do a rally, but then maybe they would, you know, do something to anybody that was walking back by yes. themselves, because right. we had to all walk back to our cars because we parked the cars in the Target parking lot. That's where it started. Mm-hmm. And the organizer, a guy named Love, who's a fantastic speaker, by the way.
Unbelievable. This young We're guy. Trying to get him on here as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, no, he's great. And I think he just did an interview, I think, with LA yeah, Times or yeah. something. Yeah. So, and he's got a connection to, he's got an amazing story as well. Yeah. So, you know, we walked with him all the way down towards the park. So we had to go back. Everybody had to go back and get their cars. So everybody was walking back in groups of twos or threes. Yeah.
Yeah, keeping Joseph. I really admired what he was, how he is organizing there, and that's one of the things that he talked about. It's like, we don't know if they're going to show up, but from now on, we want a system of accountability. You don't walk by yourself. You know, and that's the other thing that I've heard so much at these rallies that I've been going to over there, you know, Palmdale, Lancaster, this is a sundown city. If you are of color, you are not out after sundown alone, especially not right now.
Yeah. Another thing I noticed with the march is the first march I've been to and the first march that I've seen where the police weren't in front of the march. The police weren't doing anything to stop traffic. They were behind the march, which I found very interesting. I don't know if that means if it's just bad but policing or something, but you would think, because there were cars that were coming straight at us, and there were cars that were trying to make turns and everything, and there was nobody stopping them.
Yeah.
And then the organizers had to actually go out and then and kind of direct traffic, which didn't make sense when I was looking around for the cars, and then I see the bird up in the sky, and then I look behind us, and then there were six cop cars.
Yeah.
That's weird.
It felt threatening to me in a way. Like, we're not here to protect you.
Yeah, that's malice
or
incompetence.
Yeah.
That's
before
both, probably.
As I was walking up to that, people were gathering on the corner by the Target, I would see every minute a cop car would come speeding up with their sirens blaring and then slow down right in front of the protesters and then speed up and drive away. That happened about four or five times. Mm-hmm. And then we started marching. And then all of a sudden, there was, like you said, six cars right behind, like trailing in a weird way. And, you know, the helicopter above circling pretty low. It felt a little ominous. And then when you got to the park, but at the same time, when we got to the park, I noted that there was a ton of cops tucked away.
Yes.
They were not harassing the actual rally in the park.
Mm-hmm. No, the cops were probably, I would say, a quarter to a half mile away. They were kind of stationed there, not in any place there would be able to stop anything if like the Klan had showed up there.
That.
But maybe they're watching the entrance to the park. I mean, that was a strategy that they had. I'm not going to begrudge them because it's better than having riot gear out there, you know? So,
right.
You know, there were a couple of skirmishes during the rally, and, but it seemed like the organizers of the rally were able to defuse them. And as much as there might've been, you know, a couple skirmishes about people like trying to, you know, like, what are you doing here or something like that, there were 10 times as many people just trying to say, this is not what we're here for. We're here for to get justice and this and that. We can't be fighting like this.
Which was really beautiful. And I do understand why emotions are running high and why that's an environment for things to escalate pretty easily.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Do you have any information on where the investigation stands right now, what they are
No, I've got none. They're still not saying anything. And you would like to
Well,
think
they tried lying, so I guess they have to try not saying anything now.
Yeah, you'd like to think that, you know, I think what has happened right now is that Palmdale Sheriffs, which is part of the LA Sheriffs, they're directing everything towards LA Sheriff Headquarters, you know. So and then LA Sheriff Headquarters is just saying no comment.
It's incredibly frustrating. I mean, there's any number of things that could be done. We don't know what the actual autopsy is saying. We don't know if there are forensics from the rope, from his clothing, anything like that. And I don't know what the normal time frame for information like that is, but...
Yeah, I mean, and whether they'd be using an MVAC for the rope, which is kind of like a...
What's an MVAC, yeah?
An MVAC is a, for lack of a better term, it's like a DNA vacuum, you know? And it can kind of, when you're dealing with fabrics and things, it can kind of suck that up and then collect it in a way that you wouldn't be able to do. If you know, you could do it with just getting a strand of hair or a fiber, but they're able to extract DNA more like skin cells and things like that. But I don't know if they're using one of those. I doubt it, but...
Yeah, my guess is no.
Yeah, and then the You know, and then it's also a matter of, you know, you can find DNA in there that has nothing to do with crime. It could have been somebody from the factory that made it, you know, could have been somebody from the store who sold it. So, but it's a tool. It's still a tool that needs to be used. And that's where the manpower and woman power needs to be made in these investigations and not through all of this other stuff that they're doing.
It's hard to feel like they're not taking this very seriously. Hard not to feel that way.
Yeah.
Yes, I said that right. It's just, I mean, it leaves me feeling so angry and powerless in a bit a way that, like, what do we do? How do we, you know, how do we change this? How do we take them, get them to at least take accountability? I mean, regardless, say Robert Fuller did commit suicide. I don't believe that at this point in time, but say that he did. Like we've mentioned, regardless of that, this is gross incompetence in how they're handling and the situation, and people should lose their jobs over this.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know how to make that happen, you know?
Yeah. No. And the problem is it's incredibly hard to make it happen. We can't even get guys to lose their jobs after they literally kill somebody, you know, that work for a police department. And
yeah. Only one out of three Breonna Taylor shooters is fired.
Fired.
So it's, you know, the issues that are going on right now are going to have to deal with. It's one thing to say defund the police. It's another thing to actually take on the unions, take on the union contracts. The money that's going that we see, the money is going towards salaries, obviously, which is fine. It's going to pensions, you know, which is a huge part of it, and overtime, and that overtime game that they all play. You know, the pension situation is very much similar to what happened with the U.S. auto industry. You know, you're just you're writing a check that you don't have, that somebody's not going to cash for 20 years. It's not your administration, so you accept this deal. Imagine every person that you ever worked with at every job you've been at, imagine them getting 50% of that salary, you know, and that's for the rest of their lives. You know, that's where all this money is going towards. That's what we mean by, you know, defunding the police. I'm not saying take away all their pension, but I'm saying that there needs to be something better, because if we're spending over 50% of the entire city budget on policing, there needs to be something better than what's going on right now from an investigative standpoint. And we're not seeing it. And we're seeing gross incompetence right there I mean, just imagine, this is like the one case that we're looking at. What else is going on?
I mean,
yeah, that's the really frustrating thing, listening to all of this and just like every step of the way, either a lie or a complete like fuck up. And then just like, this is one thing in one place that people are actually paying attention to for, you know, various reasons. It has been brought to like people's attention, but like, where are the other ones? Yeah. And what's being done there?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. I mean, Breonna Taylor, all of it. Go ahead, Billy.
You know, and part of me is just, you know, it's, we've gotten to a point where we've recognized the issue that Black people have been screaming about for years and years and years, and we've finally, as a society, woken up to it. I think we've actually gotten there. We just have to keep up the momentum of what happens. The Black people and the relationship with the police. Even though we heard about it, we sang along songs about it, you know. But we didn't get it. But we are not equipped now from a media standpoint to cover the local stories, because local newspapers have been decimated. And so I'm not saying that they were doing it great before, because they weren't. But this would have been a time to where that could have intersected. And you know, that is one of the things that it comes on a local level. Yeah, we've got so many people covering Trump and covering national things, but it's the local news things that are suffering, and it's these kinds of stories that are probably happening a lot across America that are not going to be told.
So that's interesting. You're right. I mean, it's hard to rely on local news right now for a variety of reasons. Decimated was also a lot of conservatives that own local news organizations. There's a slant in the reporting. Cody and I had a guest on our other show recently, and we talked a lot about this, about how the 24-hour news cycle isn't as effective as it once was because we have social media. Mm-hmm. We have our phones. We can become citizen journalists. We can amplify stories if we're paying attention and doing it right. So we do have that power.
Right.
No, we're not doing it right.
No, it's actually almost worse sometimes if people care too much. Like there's been so many stories going around that I don't even want to give super details on, but like it'll start spreading and people will start and they'll be like, such and such, this person was abducted. You know, this crime was committed up here. Like you need to spread the information. This person was abducted and like, here's the vehicle. And it's like, you trace it back and there's no photo evidence. There's no missing persons report. There's nothing but people on Twitter, like not just sharing things, but like shaming each other for not sharing it so that it gets shared more. And then it's like, but what is this based on? Where is like, do we even have evidence of a victim? And that's part of what scares me with all of these cases is that, like Robert Fuller, something we need to figure out, like the truth here. There's a real, a man is dead, possibly two, and we don't really know we don't know what happened, and we need to figure it out. But there is such, in part because of all of these people being allowed to kind of grab onto whatever story is happening in this uprising are interesting to them. Like, well, there's so much chaff.
Yeah, we do definitely know that two people are dead. We just don't know. Two men are dead, but don't know what's going on. Yeah. But, you know, that's one of the things when we see this, and it's one of the, I talk about this in my book, and I talk about this on Murder Squad all the time, is that you have to follow the rules. And there's an escalation part to the rules. And the first rule is don't name names in public. We saw this with the Boston bombing. When they put out the pictures of the two bombers, everybody, not everybody on Reddit, but people on Reddit, looked at this kid who had gone missing from Brown University named Sunil Tripathi. He looked a lot like the second bomber, the kid, the younger guy. And they started talking about, hey, could this be the guy? Could this be the guy? And, you know, it turns out he had died. He might have died by suicide. We don't know. But, you know, they were dragging this kid through the mud and he had nothing to do with it. We saw it again recently. Remember that video of the douchebag on the bicycle that was tearing down the posters, the BLM posters that the little kids were, and then kind of like assaulting the little kids too. I think he was. And so they had a image of this guy. They put it up on social, and then people start posting addresses and pictures and social media profiles of the wrong people.
Yeah.
And these people have to go and say, this isn't me. Wait a minute. You know, what we always say is that, you know, send us the information or send the police the information, definitely. If the police don't do anything within a certain amount of time, then you go to the press. You know, but now that window of time for me is shrinking. Because I used to, in my investigations, I used to give them like, all right, I'll give them, you know, a little bit of space for them to do their thing. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, most of the time, if I see a good piece of footage of a suspect, I just put it in a folder and say, I'm going to check back this on a week. And then I'll do a Google search and they would have already caught the guy. But that's going to start shrinking and shrinking now because we have no trust in the police department as evidence of, you know, what happened in Palmdale. And I think that, you know, and I would not, as far as like my level of trust in the police department, it was always on a case by case basis. I could tell pretty quickly whether somebody was A, wanted to work with me, B, was pretty incompetent and they don't know what they're doing, or C, was like willing to be like, yeah, let's work on this together because we're completely lost on this case and we'll try anything. And you know, now it's coming to the forefront. It's a little liberating to be able to say it because I wasn't, you know, I didn't say it before. I was not covering things that were dealing with systemic racism that I thought, but I really was.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh man. You guys have more questions for Billy right now?
Well, I, wanted to, I just want to hear other like stories of things that you've solved, but I don't think we have time for that.
As much time as you want. If there's something, a good story. Yeah. I mean, I think it's fascinating to hear you talk about this work. I think, you know, this, I mean, you're kind of a favorite among people that are true crime junkies and citizen sleuths want to, mm-hmm. you know, put together and piece together stories. And so it is fascinating to hear you talk about this and your process. And if there's any other stories you want to share, because I think that this resonates for a lot of people.
Yeah. Or even yeah. anything that like, upon reflections, with what's happening now, you view it in a different context.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. I think that because of what's happening now, what we're doing now is we're actually capturing the events on camera, because mm-hmm. everybody has the camera. Everyone's right. got a TV studio in their pocket. So people know instinctively to go to the camera if they're around seeing it. Now, a lot of crimes happen when there's nobody around with a camera, but we're doing that. The thing is, we do that, we put it up there. Then there's there's a news cycle in social media that's even faster than the news cycle in national media and mainstream media. So you might be able to catch somebody doing something bad on camera, whether it's a police officer or somebody else. It's that follow-up. And that's mm-hmm. the thing that we need the news media to do, is the follow-up and do the follow-up work. And it's hard,
yeah.
you know, it's a matter of, you know, the reason why this happened. We've seen the police murder black men on video before. The reason why it happened is because we've never seen it happen over such a long period of time, over the 8 minutes and 46 seconds, and be so visceral, and also have no distractions because of the pandemic. And everybody finally was able to get slapped in the face with this.
I would also say we immediately knew about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Immediately made national headlines, whereas Breonna Taylor, that wasn't a household name. The mm-hmm. the urgency of her situation, the immediacy, the rage of the community has abetted by the time everybody else caught up. But yeah. yes, please continue.
Well, it's also because that was video, because there was somebody yeah. there taking it, right. and then they can exactly. post it. Exactly. So that's the key. But then it's just, you know, going that, and then it's just the follow-up. And the follow-up is the outrage. And yes, the most important thing is getting it on video, unfortunately. That's what we have to do. But and there you get the outrage, and then you can get the swell of support potentially, but it's the follow-up. And it's the follow-up mm-hmm. that we need our journalists to be doing. It's the follow-up that we need the police departments to be doing, and battling these unions. Because, you know, these police chiefs, a lot of them, I'm not giving them excuses, but their hands are tied with the police union and the contracts that they sign with the police union. And those police unions will take as much as they can get. And, you know, and it's just like, you know, the police union, think of it this way. You know, people were, you know, the big story from yesterday, the FBI investigated the noose that was found in Bubba mm-hmm. Wallace's garage. They said it was a pull for a garage door. Fine. It did look like a noose. All right. A week prior, 2 weeks prior, the New York City Police Detectives Union tweeted out that three officers were deliberately poisoned by a Shake Shack.
Yes.
Yeah, they did. They did.
So there's a difference there. One said there was a noose found hanging, and these were gearheads. Another were, I don't know, detectives. And they went out and said deliberately poisoned, and then they had to backtrack, and also they deleted that tweet.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So there's a lot of things going on with those police unions that's going to be the struggle right now when it comes yeah. to all these things with the police. But you know, for people that want to do, you know, the biggest thing is taking the photos when you're seeing something wrong. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then it's you know, doing that follow up work, sending it to yeah. the right people, doing the investigations yourself. We're distributing the news on a lot of different places, but there's not like, you know, how many people are going to do a FOIA request? You know, how many people are going to be doing this or that, you know, and it's just,
we've talked about that.
Yeah. That's where it comes down to when it comes from citizen journalism. Yeah. And listen, because they shouldn't freaking have to, it's not their job, but it's turning into our jobs now. We've made it our jobs, you know, because we can't trust, you know, that we've either decimated the media and quite frankly, we couldn't trust the media because they weren't covering these cases the way that they should have.
Yeah. It's interesting. I believe I shared this with you last week at the Juneteenth rally, but earlier last week I was talking about this with the guys here, Robert and Cody and Sophie, and I was talking about how you'd said that there was all these cameras after the police had said, oh, you know, there aren't any. And I think it was Cody that was like, you should go talk to them to make sure the police approach them. And I was like, it's been 5 days. I'm sure they have at this point. I'm sure they have. And they hadn't. They fucking hadn't.
Right. Yeah. Even the cop said it was 3 or 4 days ago, which meant that was Friday. I had gone up and showed the cameras on the Friday previous. So he had been talked to maybe Monday or Tuesday.
It's not like a huge place. It won't take them that long to get there.
No.
Right. Doing the bare minimum after so long. If you hadn't done that, they wouldn't have done that. Just like knowing that kind of information, like how valuable that information is and having that sort of sense. Like you literally just heard him say that and you're like, well, that doesn't sound right. Yeah. And you went and looked, right? Like just having that extra sense to ping your mind when you're like, wait, that isn't. I don't trust that.
Yeah.
And actually going and finding.
And I will say too, it's just, it did boggle my mind that the city hall did not have cameras, you know?
Also, what?
And the library and the fire department. You have hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment. Yeah.
Yeah. Is surrounded by all of their city hubs. It's in line of vision from all of the city hall, the fire department, the cultural center, the sheriff's department is just down the street. It's wild. It's wild.
Yeah.
I share that as we talk about also, yes, we have our cameras in our pockets. We can document things. We can be responsible with that and take it to the right places. But yeah, if something pops into your head, like maybe this should be looked into, you should talk to somebody. Don't just assume that the cops have done it. You know, if there's a right.
Even
of
and if it's just one
town.
Question, like mm-hmm. I could think of a question that a person could be asked, and if you can make that phone call, just so you have that information to counteract a lie you might hear later on.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of, you know, when you hold police accountable for this, you know, it's going to be, you know, and I knew this, that it was going to make what I do a hell of a lot harder. And I was definitely tentative to do it because of the families, the victims of the families that I work with. And this could hurt me helping their cases, but I had to just say, I can't sit still for this.
You mean putting your relationship with
if anybody now Googles me and says, you know, and looks at my social media, they're going to see that I was publicly, you know, taking this department and their detectives to task. And, you know, while I would do that privately and I would yell at detectives and stuff over the phone and things, but I would never do it publicly because I wanted to because for the victims' families, I wanted to maintain those relationships. But you know, I just couldn't sit there and, you know, while being lied to, and this was just a small, you know, tip of the iceberg.
I mean, yeah, at some point we have to like take a stand and call it what it is, what we're seeing it as anyway. And I really appreciate that you did, because we had this conversation.
Yeah. And maybe, maybe something will come of this, but.
Well, I'm certainly going to continue to show up and pay attention to this and do what I can. And I hope our listeners do as well. And also pay attention to the stories that are happening in your town, because they are happening.
Yeah, the local stuff doesn't get the attention it needs until it does. Sometimes it bubbles up to the top, but.
Yeah.
No, and the people who, sustained attention is the only thing that actually brings any of this to a positive resolution. Like, if you're wondering why things don't, like why a lot of these, you know, murders don't end in any sort of justice, like why nothing's ever solved. Some of it has to do with the fact that people lose interest and move on. And
It burns out. Yeah. Like we were talking about, like, when is somebody should get fired, if anything, for the incompetent way they've dealt with this case. And that'll happen if protest after protest keeps happening and keeps happening, and they keep demanding fire somebody. You fucked this up. And that's how it happens.
Yeah.
Billy, do you want to tell our listeners where they can find you online, plug any projects, stuff like that?
Sure. Yeah. So you can find me at Billy Jensen on both Twitter and Instagram. I'm on two podcasts, one called Jensen and Holes, the Murder Squad, with with Golden State Killer investigator Paul Holes. And we do a lot of the things that we're talking about here. We're trying to solve cold cases using the public's help. So if you're interested, check that out. I'm also on a podcast called The First Degree, which are more adjudicated cases being told from somebody who's one degree away from the perpetrator or the victim. I'll be Gone in the Dark docuseries, which starts on June 28th.
Oh, wow.
That's the book that Michelle McNamara, my friend, who was writing, and then she passed away in the middle of it. And me and her researcher, Paul Haynes, helped finish it. So, and then,
which led to helping solve that case.
I think it led to promoting...
Or promoting awareness.
Leading to more resources leading towards the solve. Yeah. Yeah. I would say that. Yeah. Yep. And then just keep on plugging away. My book, Chase Darkness With Me, just came out on paperback. There's a new chapter about the Allenstown 4, the Bear Brook case, and a lot of things in there if you want to do any kind of citizen detective work. A lot of tips and how-to guides, too.
Awesome. That's fascinating. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. This has been awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me.
And that's it. That does it for us today. Thanks again, Billy, for joining us today. That was a fascinating conversation.
I liked it because of how it went.
Yeah, that's good. True.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You guys can check us out online at Worst Year Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Follow Billy. He gave you all of that information, so I'm not going to repeat it.
Yeah, we just talked about it.
Yeah.
You know what?
What?
Bye.
Oh, yeah, bye.
Or do you want to plug your own plugs?
No.
Okay. You can follow Robert at iWriteOK on Twitter. You can follow Katie and Cody on Twitter and Instagram because they're adults. Katie is at Katie Stoll, and Cody is at Dr. Mr. Cody. We have a TeePublic store.
It's true, also.
Keep wearing your face masks and washing your hands.
But also, bye.
Yeah, I was going to say bye, yeah.
And yes, bye.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's going to get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.